Okay, good morning, everyone. Can we do better than that? Come on, good morning. How are we? All right, so welcome to, what's the code here? CLD322B. I'm Jeff Alexander. I'm a technical solution professional for enterprise mobility and security. A lot of you might have known me formerly as the artist, as a technical evangelist for the last 12 years. I finally decided I had to go and do something new. So I now focus squarely on our enterprise mobility plus security, which is very important because the product used to be called Enterprise Mobility Suite, but we changed the name last year and it is now known as Enterprise Mobility Plus Security because that is one of our key pillars with the product. Security is a very big part of that. So I wanted to get kind of, you probably won't admit this, how many of you are willing to admit that you were a victim of a cyber attack? Oh, a few people. Good. Well, we can talk later, right? So we got something that might help you out with that. So this session is really about getting ahead of cyber attacks with enterprise mobility and security in all the tools that we have within that. Now, we know that a lot of us right now, and I want to kind of preface this with a little bit about setting the scene of how we actually got here, what's kind of driving a lot of this. How many of you have mobile devices with you? How many of you have more than one mobile device with you? More than two mobile devices with you? Yeah, still people have up their hands. The reality is that we live in a mobile first, cloud first world. And you've heard Scott Guthrie say that a lot. We talk about that quite a bit. We live in a world where people have mobile devices and they still want to be productive on those mobile devices. You as IT professionals want to make sure that you're keeping your data secure. And that's really what we're trying to drive with Enterprise Mobility Plus Security, is to make sure that you can enable users to be productive on their devices that they want to use every day, and you can be confident that your data is still secure. Now, a lot of companies are going through what we call this digital transformation. We heard this term quite a lot, and a lot of companies are going through this. It's hard, though, because you got less and less resources, but you still need to make those users productive. They want to use their devices. They want to use SaaS applications. We're gonna talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow when I do the Cloud App Security session. But really, digital transformation is really allowing you to keep your users productive, but allow you to continue to keep your data secure. Now, those of you that mentioned that you were a victim of cybersecurity, your world, we live in a world right now where this is happening every day. We're seeing attacks all the time. And the world, your world has probably been shattered. That's why we kind of have the bulb exploding, you know, trying to do some metaphor here, is the fact that, you know, the way the cyber is going right now, we're seeing a lot of attacks going on every day. And this is just an example, and you've probably heard a lot of these attacks that were going on. This is a small example of what we all heard about, the iOS vulnerability that happened late last year. And there's a number of attacks, and if you pick up the news, and every day there is a sophisticated attack going on. And these are not the script kiddies that we had back around Slammer and Blaster in, you know, the early 2000s. These are very well-funded, nation-states, cybercrime that are very sophisticated. What we have to assume today now, though, and there's two terms that we kind of use in the industry, is around assuming breach or assuming compromise. So you have to assume that you've been breached. Does anybody know the average amount of time that an attacker is inside your network before anybody notices? 12 months. 200 and, anywhere from 140 to 200 days. Okay? They're inside your network. So it's safe to say that we can assume compromise or breach. All right? So, you know, these are, and nobody's immune to any of these attacks. You know, these attacks that are happening are there, and nobody's immune to it. So this brings us to the fact that cybersecurity is rapidly becoming the number one priority for IT and for businesses around the world. Cybersecurity is something that is very important to businesses going on, to make sure that core parts of your infrastructure are secure. Traditionally with cybersecurity, we built walls around our network. I worked in Microsoft's internal IT for about 6 years, and we built walls around our network. We put firewalls up around our network. We had what we called the outer shell and then the GUI center that we didn't want anybody to get access to. And that's the way it was back in the early 2000s. But now it's changed. You, with all your mobile devices that you have, you are in multiple locations. You are using your devices everywhere. You as a user are becoming the new firewall. right? So cybersecurity is a number one priority for a lot of CIOs, CISOs, and this is the they're concerned about these particular issues that are going on. So at Microsoft, we've been building something, and I'll use the word magical, but we are building something quite special. You may have heard of this, you may not have heard of this. This is the Microsoft Intelligent Security Graph. At Microsoft, we are the only company that gets all these signals into our cloud. Okay, so we are getting anywhere from 200 plus, we have over 200 plus global consumer and commercial services. All those services, Xbox, all those different, you know, Office 365, all those signals come into the graph, and we layer machine learning over that so that we get intelligence about what's going on out there in the broader world. We get, you guys all know this, you probably update machines all the time. It's probably one of the most painful things you do. There's a billion devices updated every month. So we're getting signals into the security graph from the update devices that are getting updated. We are getting, and this is unique to us, is 300 billion monthly authentications through our cloud. Okay, so we are getting that every month. This is another bit of signal that comes into our environment. And when that goes into the graph, we throw machine learning across that. 200 billion emails are analyzed, and we get that into the graph. And when we bring all this information into the graph, we have intelligence like no other company. Microsoft is probably, if you look at this, and you know, you guys are, a lot of you are probably security professionals, we are probably the largest security company that you've never heard of. All right? We are the largest security company that you've never heard of. We spend more money on R&D in regards to security than the top five security vendors combined. So Microsoft is investing heavily in this, which is why we changed the name of Enterprise Mobility to Enterprise Mobility Plus Security. So all these signals come into the graph, right? All these signals are coming into the graph, and we are layering machine learning over that to get more of that, right? So this is, and this is constantly changing. What this allows us to do is to allow products that we have within Enterprise Mobility and Security to consume the information and the signals that come into the security graph so that you have that intelligence already. We already have that intelligence in the security graph so that you can take advantage of it. We know when breaches are happening. We know if there's an account. We have details if an account is being sold on the dark web or something like that. So we can get that intelligence and apply risk to that as well. So the security graph, we get all that in there, and once that information is in there, Microsoft Enterprise Mobility Plus Security can then consume all those signals. So to introduce you to our product, how many of you have heard of EMS, Enterprise Mobility Plus Security? How many people are using that today, aspects of it? Okay, oh, that's good. We like to see a lot of hands, that's good. So what I want to point out on this slide, because I want to definitely get into the technical side of things, but essentially we are the only comprehensive solution. There's a lot of point solutions that are out there across what we do within the whole entire suite. Okay, so our focus around this particular product is to look at things like access control, persistent data protection, and threat detection. Okay, so attack detection and remediation. And we do this across four different areas that you see up on the slide. Across your identity. Identity is probably the most important piece. Your identity is the piece that we want to protect. And later on, I'm going to show you a little bit about Azure AD identity protection, how you can actually protect identities to make sure that data is not getting lost. Then we look at the device. You said you had a bunch of different devices in your environment. We look at the device. We can put policy against the device. Then we look at apps and data. And this is powered by that intelligence that we get from the graph in there, and that combines to give you a holistic view of your environment. Not a point solution, but a holistic view of your environment that is firmly rooted in identity and security. And that's what we're going to be focusing on for the rest of the talk, is really talking about identity-driven security, what we're actually doing in regards to that. So you kind of know what enterprise mobility and security is. All this stuff has brought up blind spots for IT. IT has been blindsided by the fact that cybercrimes are more and more prevalent. A couple of you raised your hands, so we're doing pretty good in Australia. It wasn't that number, 32%, but 32 of businesses are seeing that reported to be affected by cybercrime. And that can cost companies a lot of money. The other thing, the interesting thing that is that what we see is that shadow IT, and I'll talk about this more tomorrow when I talk about cloud app security, is that 80% of users, and I don't reckon this is a number that's, I think this number is pretty low. I think this is 80% of employees admit This is admit. Admit is the key word here. They admit to be using unsanctioned SaaS applications that you don't know about. Okay, you don't know about these things like Box or all these different types of SaaS applications that you have. The other thing is data breaches. 63% of data breaches are from weak passwords. Anybody know what the most popular password is in America today? Password 123. If you ever go and search, if you want to watch a funny skit on this, go and search for passwords in Jimmy Kimmel Live. They go out onto Hollywood Boulevard and they trick people into giving them their passwords. And I can tell you what, it wasn't that hard for them to do it. So that's a real problem. Breach involve weak, default, or stolen passwords. I'm going to show you some stuff in our Advanced Threat Analytics product a little bit later on so you can see how attackers exploit that. So when we talk about this, the security landscape, though, has changed dramatically over the last few years. How many of you have put firewalls up around your network? Probably almost everybody, right? It's traditionally how we did it. So as we transition to cloud and mobility, what we're seeing is that you've got these existing technologies that you've been using for a number of years. But as we transition to mobility, over to this mobility using different devices, whether it's Windows tablets, whether it's iPhones, whether it's Android devices, doesn't matter what it is. All of a sudden, that landscape, that attack surface has increased. Because your users are in multiple locations, they're using multiple devices, it gives attackers a larger surface area to attack your business. What does that translate to? That translates to the fact that your existing defenses are no longer sufficient to be able to deal with these threats. Okay, so as users are starting to access SaaS applications and also on-premises data from multiple devices, the current technology that you have is not sufficient for that. All right, so we want to be able to try to make sure that we're providing the ability to give your users the productivity to use those and to get access. And that's what we're kind of focusing on with Enterprise Mobility Plus Security. So our approach is a holistic approach. We have a sort of a holistic approach to this security challenge. So when you look at this, what we do around the holistic area is to make sure that we address security challenges across the user's identity, making sure that identity is protected, and I'll show you that in a little bit, across the devices that they're actually using, across the apps that they have to use. And anybody have an idea of the average number of applications that are being in use in enterprises today? It's around about 700 or thereabouts. Okay, so there's a lot of applications that users use. And whether that is in, doesn't matter what platform it is, whether they're using it on premises, whether they're using it in the cloud. It's identity driven. How many of you are syncing your accounts with Azure AD Connect up to the cloud today? Okay, so you're syncing your identities up to the cloud. Okay, so that's good. So, you know, that identity that you're syncing to the cloud gives you a common one identity to get access to thousands of apps in the cloud, okay? So, you know, access to all the corporate resources on-premises or whether it's in the cloud or not. With the ability to provide risk-based conditional access. Now, that machine learning that we have, that we get into this, we're able to provide, to apply risk to those accounts and have conditions around that account. I'm going to show you how we can set up a few of these conditions. Now, we're constantly innovating. Microsoft is obviously spending a lot of money in regards to security. We're constantly learning more about the attacks that are happening out there, constantly changing our platform to protect against these types of attacks. And then, of course, that intelligence. We are very unique. No other company has the intelligence that we have in regards to this intelligent security graph. It's quite amazing the information that we actually are able to get and be able to provide you with. You know, if you look at the Target attack that was last year, what was it, somewhere around 40,000 different accounts that were leaked. We told them, the FBI told them, they didn't listen, we had a breach, right? So we had that intelligence. We're able to provide that on your tenant in Azure so that we can see if there's any issues going on. So I'm going to talk about, as we do this, I'm going to go through three pillars around this. First of all is protecting at the front door. And what is the front door? When we talk about protecting at the front door, when we talk about identity-driven security, it's not just the front door. It's the side door. It's the garage door. It's the window. It's wherever you're coming in, wherever users are coming into your network. We want to safeguard your resources. with risk-based conditional access. So make sure that when users are accessing applications, when you set up single sign-on to those applications, that they have protections to be able to use that. You can throw a multi-factor authentication if they are on a device that's not supported. Or you can throw a multi-factor authentication if they're in a location that is not supported. Okay, so you want to put these conditions in place. Now, our users don't make mistakes, right? They never make mistakes. Everybody's shaking their head. Yeah, right. That's why we're all in this room, because users make mistakes. We want to be able to find out, and we want to protect them before they make mistakes. So we'll talk a little bit about that. The other thing, and the last bit I'm going to show you, is a product called, anybody using Advanced Threat Analytics in the room? Oh, wow. We need to talk to you guys, because that's a few people using ATA. Okay, so good. We're going to show you a little bit about ATA, Advanced Threat Analytics, how we can actually detect these attacks before they cause damage. And this is about how attackers will try to infiltrate your network through lateral movement, through all kinds of different types of techniques that they have to get into your network, and how we can actually protect that and protect that before we see damage. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention at the beginning, I've got a lot to show you today. So at the end of this, we will be taking questions. I'll try to leave some time for questions. And I've got a couple of good mates here that are here from the product team, from Corp Resources, that are here to help me with answering your questions as well. And if you want to talk to us afterwards, we're going to be here for the rest of the week. So we've got some deep knowledge here that can help you on any of the types of stuff, because a lot of you raised your hands that you're using this stuff. So we've got a bunch of resources here that can help you with some of that stuff as well. Okay, so let's talk about the first one, which is protecting at the front door. So the protecting at the front door one is around looking at how can I protect my organization at the front door itself. Okay, so we have a couple of technologies in Azure Active Directory that I'm going to take you through and show you a little bit about how that works. So you can go, now I talked earlier about the fact that, you know, a lot of you raised your hands in the sense that you have firewalls around your network already. So you have those firewalls there. The user is now your firewall. That's a very big shift in the way that we look at security. Because you want to keep your users productive. You want to make sure that they can use the devices they want to use, whether it's a BYOD device that you do. You don't enroll that device, or you don't actually, you know, they bring their own device, they want to use it for work. You have the ability to throw some conditions. Now, you can go in and set up conditions to say, hey, I want to make sure that, say, if Kwok here is using his device in a particular location that's not within the range of IPs that I've actually set for my organization, I'm going to throw an MFA challenge up in front of him to make sure that he has to prove who he is, right? So I'm going to throw that onto the authenticator app on his phone, that he has to prove who he actually is. Because a lot of the attacks that we see are traversals from different locations. What if he goes to, you know, what if he logs on on the Gold Coast here, and 10 minutes later he logs on in the UK or something like that? We want to be able to flag that risk to say that, hey, that's an impossible travel scenario, and we want to maybe throw an MFA, or we want to block access for him to be able to get access to that. We can also look at, oftentimes we want to look at the device state. So what state is the device? Is it encrypted? Is the device compliant to what we are providing our users? Is it compliant? And we also want to be able to look at, okay, what group of people do we want to actually get make access to this? So we have device-based conditional access, and then we can also specify a group of users that we want to actually give access to. And then all this can be then set a risk level. That risk level is, remember I was talking about the intelligent security graph and all the data that we're gathering. That risk level is coming from a lot of different data sets that we have. We are then able to machine learn across that and put a risk level across that. I've got a couple users in my environment that I've purposely put risk on so that I accidentally locked one of my guys out the other day, which was really interesting trying to get that back. But, you know, it works, right? So that risk level allows us to flag that and understand what's going on. Now, there's two technologies that we use. First one is identity protection. This is about helping to understand what the user's identity is about. And then there's another one called privileged identity management, which I'll cover in a minute. So the first one is Azure Active Directory identity protection. Okay, so this gives you a consolidated view on the dashboard of the users that you have in your environment that are at risk. Okay, so you have a dashboard that tells you, okay, have I seen some brute force attacks? Has there been infected devices? Has there been any configuration vulnerabilities? Have I seen any suspicious logons on that particular device? That user may be outside of the range that of IPs that I want to allow. Say my user is accessing Salesforce, but we don't want them to access Salesforce outside the network. And we want to actually throw up an MFA in front of that if they're using that application. We have some recommendations that you can do for this. You can take that user out of that risky state and have some recommendations for that. We have some calculations that we do. We calculate a score based on that intelligence that we already have. And then we have a risk-based conditional access that will automatically protect that account. Because remember, we're talking about protecting the identity of the user, making sure if those credentials have been for sale or there's some sort of way they've been compromised, because users always walk away. How many times have you been in a Qantas club and watched people walk away from their laptop and leave their machine completely open? You know, if that particular machine has been compromised, we want to be able to do that. And we have some policies that we can put in play. We can go, okay, we'll put an MFA challenge for risky logons. Now, be careful of how often you put MFA in front of a user, because they will start to get annoyed. So you want to be careful about how often you put MFA in front of them, but we can do that and make sure for risky-based logon. You can change bad credentials. So if their password is expired, you can force them to change their password on the next logon, for example, block those attacks by simply blocking their access altogether. Now, the next one, for those of you, how many of you are sysadmins in your organization? Okay, so how many of you know how many administrators you have in your environment? Okay, how many of you don't know how many administrators you have in your environment? Okay, so that's often a thing that is a way for you to increase your attack surface. So what this is about, privileged identity management, or how it's known by its acronym, which is PIM. We always have acronyms at Microsoft, so it's called PIM, Privileged Identity Management. So essentially what this allows us to do is that it will go and look at your environment and tell you how many administrators, global administrators, you have in your environment. Now, oftentimes, the users that are global administrators do not need to be administrators all the time, right? So what we can do with this is we can set a policy to say that, hey, if I'm going to somebody I can change. For example, I've got Derek in my environment as he's a global administrator currently now. He may not need to have access all the time. So what I can do is I can set it so that he will need to activate his privileges and he only gets them for 3 hours. Okay, so that we can then be very specific about how long. He may only need to do a task on, say, a Friday afternoon before he goes home for the weekend. And what it'll allow us to do is to really say, discover the permanent administrators we have, and then reduce that risk by reducing the number of global administrators we have. So now, one of the things we do with this is if Derek goes and says, okay, I want to activate my privileges to perform this task, we throw an MFA up in front of him to make sure that he has to prove who he is. That's on by default. Can't change that. And then we alert administrators for any out-of-band. They can retain those privileges for a pre-configured amount of time, and I'll show you what that looks like. And then the security admins can discover all the different priorities. We can do reports and find out who is an admin in our environment. So it's a really powerful way for us to be able to see who are being administrators in that. Because, you know, oftentimes what happens is sometimes you will get administrators that get disgruntled, and they might leave the organization and do something bad, right? So this way we understand who our administrators are. So we're about 20 minutes in. The average adult has an attention span of about 20 minutes right before. So I've got to change up a bit and go through a little bit of a demo so that you can see how some of this stuff works. All right. And for those of you that were at my session last year, I think it was last year at Ignite, I have turned off all my alerts because last time I did a presentation at Ignite, all my Twitter stuff was coming up. People were going, hey, he's presenting. And I'm like, oh, I should have turned that off. So that's off now, so that's a good thing. So the first thing I'm gonna start off with is how do we actually go and configure our applications to be put set so that we can control how the users actually use those. So I've got a bunch of number of applications here. I've got some SaaS applications, I've got some on-premises applications, and I can do at a per-application basis, I can control how that application is being used in my environment. So for example, I'm going to go into Salesforce, and I've got some SaaS applications, and I'll just zoom into this a little bit. I've got some SaaS applications here. I've got Salesforce, and I've also got this app that you can see there. It's called Super Secret App, right? So that's an on-premises application that I've got running in my environment, and I'm using the Azure Application Proxy to allow me to have an on-premises application as well as SaaS applications. The idea is that when the user goes to their applications through the Access Panel applications, they get this view of their applications. Okay, so what we want for the user is they want to go to their applications. They don't care if that application is on-premises. They don't care if the application is in the cloud. They just want to get access to that. So I've configured single sign-on for those. I'm going to come back to that in a minute so that you can see what it's like for the user at the end of this configuration. So the first thing I'm going to do, let me just go over to here. I've got a bunch of tabs up. So I'm going to go into Salesforce. I'm going to show you how we actually can go and configure this application. Of course, you know, when you first go into the application, if I wanted to configure single sign-on for this, there's a step-by-step process in how we do that for those applications. And for Salesforce, you go through a guide on how to set up single sign-on for Salesforce. But I've already done that, so what I'm going to do is go into the Configure tab so that I can show you how we can do per application MFA so that we can protect that application. Okay, so you've got some settings here for single sign-on. And then we've got some ability to do multi-factor authentication, which is multi-factor authentication and what I call location-based rules. Remember we talked about location is the fact that we can set rules for the application as well as the user's location, where they're accessing that application, because we want to be able to protect that user no matter where they use this application. Okay. So what I've done here is I've set, obviously, access rules for this. I've set a group for my sales and marketing team in here. And you can see here the control that I can do for this. Now, we've got a couple of options here. We can go and do require multi-factor authentication. We can do multi-factor authentication when they're out of the office. So I would highly suggest you don't put multi-factor authentication on while they're actually in the office, because that will just annoy users to no end. So you do it while they're actually out of the office. You may actually want to set block access when we're not at work, for example. There's some things you may want to do there. I've just set it to require multi-factor authentication in the demo because it makes it easier to actually show the whole process of what it looks like for the user. Then we have some device access rules. I've turned this off. So what I can do here is I can go and specify the devices that I am going to that they can use that are compliant. And you see, obviously, we support Android, iOS, Windows devices. I'm not sure that anybody would be using Windows Mobile, but you know, that's life. We've got it there. Hey! Yay! Good to see. How many people have a Windows phone? Oh, love it. Good to see. There you go. You're the guy that still has it. No. All right. So, I'm sorry. I had to finally switch. I went the fruit way. I'm so sorry. That's okay. It's all right. All right. So, you know, we can go and set, like, you know, we can say, look, all devices just need to be compliant. And then other devices, you know, we won't be able to allow them in. But I'm going to turn that off because I'm not showing that just at the moment. You have some access rules. Okay, and what we can do here is we can go, I've already showed you that bit. But then we have the ability to, if you want to have self-service for your users. So do you want to allow your users to self-enroll to this SaaS application? Okay. Now, the other thing, of course, I want to show you is not only do you, in your environment, do you have, SaaS applications that users are using, but you also have, get rid of that guy. That's not what I want. You have on-premises applications. Okay, so this is my super secret application. So this application is running in my environment here. And I knew that was going to happen because MSIT always locks my machine after 5 minutes, but it's very easy to get back in. Go network. So I have an on-premises environment where I've got, you know, a bunch of applications that are currently running. Okay, so I've got you know, my domain controller, I've got, you know, a couple of ADFS servers, management server running config manager, and I've got a web server that I'm running the application proxy on that. So I've got an application that I want to make available to my users. So I've put the connector on that particular web server, and I'm connected that up to my Azure account, and I've configured that so the users can access that when they're outside, no matter where they are for that application. And what I wanted to show you here is the fact that we can go, and you see we don't have as many tabs here to configure an on-premises application, but we have the same ability to configure MFA for this application. Okay, so we have the same ability to do those access rules, just like we did for that SaaS application. Okay, so we're able to do the same thing regardless of whether it's on-prem or whether it's in the cloud as a SaaS application. Now, you might have noticed that when I was with the Salesforce application, I set up multi-factor authentication. So I'm going to go back down here as Isaiah, and you can see that Isaiah has got a number of applications that he can use. Office 365, that's our most favorite SaaS application that we work with. And he's got LinkedIn, he's got Salesforce, he's got a number of applications. He's going to go to Salesforce. And he's going to log on. And because we've put MFA up in front of this, as he goes into this, he's not going to completely be in there. What's happening now is a text is being sent to my mobile phone. So I should get a message fairly soon, which is my verification code that should come up. Okay, there's my verification code. So for me, I have to, in order for me to access this Salesforce application as Isaiah, I have to prove who I am, okay, to make sure that we're protecting that access, that identity of where that user is accessing that. Because we don't know where he is and where he's going to be accessing that particular application. So we want to make sure that we're protecting this. Now, you guys know what's going to happen. He's just going to go into Salesforce. So I'm not going to continue on with that because I've got other demos I want to actually show you. So the next thing I want to show you is Azure Active Directory Identity Management. So essentially what we have here in the new portal is the new Azure AD Identity Protection. So essentially what we get here is a nice dashboard that tells you where risk is for your users in your environment. And you can see right away, I see I've got one user that is flagged for high risk. This user's had risky logons. This user's had issues with where they've been logging on from. We are detecting through our machine learning technology that that user account may be for sale on the dark web. It may be something going on with that account. And you need to be able to do something about that. Now, you notice up on the right-hand side, we've got the vulnerabilities. Okay, so we've got some vulnerabilities here. So right away, you've got users without multi-factor authentication. I've got 119 users that haven't activated multi-factor authentication. So that is something I might want to educate my users to make sure that they do something about that. We've got some administrators that aren't using their privileged roles. Okay, so we've got some administrators that are not needing to be an administrator, and we can go and fix that up. The other thing is, how many times have you seen this? We have too many global administrators. 8's probably a low number in a lot of organizations. You probably have a lot more in your organization. Why do we have so many global administrators? We really don't need it, so we can go do something about that. So I'm going to go into the users flagged for risk. I can go into that tab. I should be able to. I did click it, I think. Do that again. There we go. So here I can see my users that are currently flagged for risk. And Isaiah is the one I've been picking on for this and making sure that he's flagged for risk. You see we have some high, medium, and low. We don't have any low there, but we just have high and medium. And we've got Isaiah, who's at a high risk event at this point in time. Okay, so you know some of the risks are over 90 days old. We can actually see what's been going on, whether he's registered for multi-factor authentication, his current location. And then we can go down and see these risk events that are currently going on. Now, for example, signing in from an unfamiliar location, you can simulate this if you're setting up in your environment. Just download the Tor browser, right? Download the Tor browser, which is a way to anonymize yourself on the internet. It's a very innocent tool, right? But you notice what happens with Tor browser is it redirects traffic to a whole bunch of different places. So what we do is we know that Tor browser is used in a lot of attacks, right? So if Isaiah is using the Tor browser in his environment, we know that that's a risky location, a risky logon. So we're going to flag that for risk. I'm going to log on as Megan a little bit later in a second so you can see what that looks like, right? But you can see here I've got sign on from unfamiliar locations. Impossible travel to a typical location. And the way that I simulated this is I essentially created a VM in the UK, and I have my logon here locally in Australia. I log on with Isaiah in the UK, and then 2 minutes later, I log on to my machine here locally with the same account. That flags an atypical, incorrect, impossible travel location. That could indicate that you have a compromise going on at that point in time. So that, you know, you could have some sort of compromise going on that you might want to investigate, right? So signing in from an anonymous IP address, that could be the one where you're logging into a Tor browser or something like that, that you're not supposed to be able to do that. Okay, so here you can see how the traffic has been routed. So this is saying that I logged on in the Netherlands. I don't remember doing that. So that could be a risk that you're going to want to investigate and do something about. What you might want to do at that point is, if that's not a problem, you can go ahead and resolve that. Okay, you can mark it as a false positive. When you mark it as a false positive, that just increases the machine learning capability. You mark it as a false positive, that might, you know, might not be something that you want to worry about. You resolve that if he's a legitimate thing that's going on. You've talked to Isaiah. It's okay. You can resolve that. His risk will go away, and you'll be able to actually sort that out. Okay. So now the other thing that we can do with this as well. Let me just close these out. Is we can go and set a sign-in risk policy. Okay, so we can go here and set, okay, I've got some users, I've got some conditions I want to set, and I want some controls that I want to put on this. So if I go into my users, and I've set this for Megan, okay, so Megan is one of my users, and I've set a risk condition for her that I want to make sure that if, you know, something, I've had some sort of report that her account might be under some issues, so I've set a condition for that, and then I've got a sign-in risk. And we can set medium, I've set medium or above on this. And this is based on some of the machine learning that we have coming into this. And so when I select that, click done, and then we have some options of what we want to do with this risk. Okay, so we could allow access, but require a multi-factor authentication. In which case that we may want to actually force them to reset their password. So if I log on as Isaiah, here you see Isaiah is logged on. Right now, this user right now doesn't have risk, okay? I've simulated it before, but he can log on. Now, if Isaiah comes across and starts to do some weird stuff and starts to log on to a Tor browser, he might get in for the first time, but we may actually start to see some risky conditions going on and blocked him afterwards. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to log on as Megan because we know that we've got a condition in there, and there's something dodgy going on with her account. So she's logging on from a Tor browser, and oftentimes it takes a lot longer to log on. I don't know why anybody would use this. It takes an amazing amount of time to connect to anything because of all the routing that goes on. So she's going to try to log in, and because her account is under risk, I didn't type her password right, so. She's blocked. Blocked the account. She's coming in for a browser that we don't trust. Block that account completely. Okay. So I'm going to close that down because I really don't know what that's going to do to my machine, that browser. So I'll turn that off for the time being. I'm going to go back over here and I'm going to show you a little bit about privileged identity management. That's because we've signed in with our own guy. That's okay. Network's fast here, so we'll log in as my admin. Love that. You don't want to go to a Microsoft demo without seeing Contoso. You're going to feel ripped off if you don't see Contoso. So if Contoso's there, everybody feels happy now. You already know the password, right? So you've seen enough of these demos to understand what the password is, so that's good. All right, so I've logged back in as my administrator. I'm going to go in and show you a little bit about privileged identity management. If this tab's come up. which is this one here. All right. So go into Privilege Identity Management, and this is a very simple console in the sense that I have to go and activate my roles. And what we're seeing here is my security administrator, my privileged role administrator, and my global administrator. Now, I've already gone through and actually done all this, so I've activated all those accounts. Then what I can do under the Manage Privileged Roles is I can see a dashboard of the number of administrators that I actually have and take some action against this. Now, if I go and look at my role summary, and I wanted to include my mates in this demo, so I've created... You have an account in my environment, Derek, so I wanted to make sure that you were included in the presentation here. So, Quark, I didn't get a chance to create it. Sorry about that, man. So I've got Derek there, but he's a permanent administrator. But he doesn't really need to be a permanent administrator. Do you?
Yes.
You need to be a permanent admin. Yeah, cut him, right? Take away his screwdriver? Right, okay. So you see here, Isaiah is eligible. Okay, what's the difference between eligible and permanent? Eligible means that they're going to have to request access to activate their global administrator rights. Okay, so what will happen is as we go to Derek's account and we take him and we make him eligible, what we're doing is we're moving him down a level so that he doesn't have administrator rights because he doesn't need administrator rights all the time. Okay? He will now get an email sent to his account from Azure Active Directory, from our administrator, to say, hey, look, you know, you're not an administrator. You're going to have to request that later on. Okay? So Isaiah has already received that email. So we'll cancel that one out because we don't need that. And where is my Outlook? It's not there. It's all right. We'll sign in as Isaiah in a sec. We'll sign in as Isaiah on his Outlook.
Go back to the,
I've got it. Yeah. So I'm going to log into my Outlook. And I'll show you the email that the user actually gets for this. Too many logons. Okay, so I'm going to log on as Isaiah. Pass that word one. See? I'm sharing and caring kind of place here, right? All right, so you see an alert from the global administrator, okay? So you can now activate your privilege role, okay? So we've made him eligible. He can now go into the portal, and he can activate his role when he needs to do that, okay? So what will happen is he goes and activates that role. We will see some alerts that come into this portal, Privilege Identity Management, when Isaiah or when Derek goes and activates his role as to some history about when he actually did that, so that we know when administrators are doing administrative tasks in our directory, okay? So that's a really powerful way for us to actually see what's going on in our directories to find out what our users are doing and also what our administrators are doing. So I'm looking at the clock. I've got a half an hour left, so I want to make sure that we switch over. All right. Okay. So that's kind of the first part is around protecting at the front door. Now, what about protecting against user mistakes? So there's a number of things that we can do around protecting against user mistakes. And I'm going to cover this very briefly here. We have other sessions later on in the week where we're going to cover this in a lot more depth. But essentially what we've got here is some questions that you need to ask yourself. Okay, so around protecting against your data against users' mistakes, how can I gain visibility into the applications that my users are using? We talked about the fact that users admit to using SaaS applications. How do I actually find out what user applications they're using? So last year, we acquired three different companies to complete the Enterprise Mobility Plus Security. The first one was Aerato, which was our advanced threat analytics, which I'll talk about in a little bit. The second one was Adalom. I don't know where they get these names, but Adalom was another company we acquired that became Cloud App Security. Now, Cloud App Security is what we call a CASB product that allows you to do shadow IT discovery. And that shadow ID discovery, we will look at 13,000 different SaaS applications, and we look through your logs, through your firewall logs, and we will scan your network without any agents on the user's machine. And that's the real powerful piece of this, is not having to have any agents on the user's machine. To be able to scan, then we will assign a risk score for those applications that your users are using. Okay, so we can say, okay, you know, they might be using Box, but you know that particular application might not adhere to certain standards that are important to your company. You know, HIPAA standards or compliance standards or security standards. Then we can do some policy for data control. Now, tomorrow we are, Andrew McMurray is doing a session on Azure Information Protection. One of the great things about our CAS product here is that integrates very much into our Azure Information Protection product. And I'll talk about that in a second. Now, how do I prevent leakage from my mobile applications? Microsoft Intune's been around. How many of you are using Microsoft Intune in your environment? Okay, lots. That's great. Good to see that a lot of people are using that. We have two program managers here from the product team in Australia that are at Ignite this week. So if you come down to the stand, we're kind of standing at this little booth that was kind of an afterthought, which is where we're actually sitting. And we've got the program managers there. They are here to answer any of your Intune questions that you have. They're named Ian Bartlett and Matt Shadbolt. Yeah, you want to definitely, if you're using Intune, have a chat to them. But this is really giving us the ability to manage our mobile applications from an MDM perspective, so mobile device management and mobile application management, or MAM as it's called. Okay, gives you DLP for your Office 365 mobile applications, essentially containerizing the data that's on there. So we can say, okay, we want to keep the data that's on those devices protected and so that it's not able to be leaked to the device, out to another user, be able to keep that device within our managed environment, our MDM environment. We do optional device management, LOB app protection. And there's other sessions that are happening around Intune and Config Manager later. So back onto the Azure Information Protection. Azure Information Protection, and I don't want to steal too much of Andrew's thunder, but essentially it's about rights management. Okay, so we have had RMS for quite a long time. Okay, so the RMS piece is the protection area. Okay, so whether it's Azure RMS or AD RMS on premises. We then acquired a company called Secure Islands that give us the ability to do classification and labeling of those documents. Okay, so this document has protected data or credit card data or Medicare card numbers in there. We will put a label on that so that that document can't leak. And then the monitor and respond is something we added late last year to allow you to track, which is simply revocation of the document. Track where that document's being opened. If that document suddenly shows up in Vietnam, we'll say, again, including you in the presentation, shows up in Vietnam somewhere, you may not want that document to be in that location, and you can revoke the access to that. So the last bit I want to do with the last bit of time I have left is talking about how do we detect attacks before they cause damage. Because, you know, the title of this session is really talking about getting ahead of cyber attacks. How can we protect ourselves to make sure that we're not seeing damage inside our network? So when we talk about detecting attacks before they actually cause damage, we have a couple of ways that we actually do this. So in the cloud, we have Cloud App Security, which is our CASB Cloud App Security broker application. It does detection in the cloud, and I'll talk much more detail about how the architecture works tomorrow morning at 9:45, more about how that actually works. What I'm going to spend a little bit more time on is our advanced threat analytics. This is our Aerato acquisition in 2014, I believe that was, that we acquired Aerato. That allows us to, just in a nutshell with Cloud App Security, we do, at the app level, we do behavioral detection, okay? So behavioral analytics and anomaly detection. You know, so for example, you know, you as a user might suddenly download 5 gig of data. That's what we call an anomaly. That user doesn't normally download that amount of data. So we're going to throw up an alert to say, hey, this user's downloading a lot of data. We might want to block that. There might be something weird going on here. Then Azure Active Directory at the identity level. We can do behavior analytics and identity reporting to find out what's going on with that data. And we're going to be, I'm going to have that, as I said, that whole CAS session tomorrow so you can hear more about that. But what? How do I detect on-premises attacks? Okay, and I'll talk a little bit about what ATA is, where it actually fits in the marketplace. And this is really what we call user and entity behavior analytics. It's an amazing acronym, UEBA. It took me a while to get my head around that, but it's UEBA, what basically allows us to detect known or malicious attacks. So what it's really looking at is, for example, you know, you might use a couple of machines in your day-to-day work. If all of a sudden Derek is using 6 servers in the environment, that could be an anomaly that something is going on. And I'm going to show you what that looks like in the portal so you can see what it looks like. But I wanted to briefly talk about what is ATA and how does it actually work and what are we trying to drive there? The whole idea around ATA is what we're actually doing is trying to monitor and detect the attack kill chain. This is an example of what the attack kill chain and what attackers are actually looking at, how the world, what the attacks actually look like. And attackers are very, very patient people. Like I said, they will sit in your environment anywhere from 140 days to 200 days before anybody actually knows anything about it. Okay? Now, this is a look at how they actually do that. They start off with some external recon, some internal recon, and they're looking at accounts that not necessarily, the low privilege, this on the left is your low privileged lateral movement. And they're just gathering information at that point because they're at the end of the day, what their goal is domain dominance. That's when they want to get your Kerberos tickets. They want to get, and I'm going to show you how we actually do that. They want to get all this information. So, you know, they might start with local privilege escalation. And there's some tools that are in Windows that they actually use to do this. NS lookup, LDAP bind, some tools that are built into the operating system that they actually use. There's other tools that they use. I'm not here to show you how to hack, by the way. So it's just to give you an idea of what we're actually doing and how we're actually looking at that kill chain. You know, they might start with compromised credentials. They might sit there with compromised credentials. How do you know they have compromised credentials? They may have the password. It's very, very hard to detect that they have compromised credentials because they might have the password. It doesn't look like they've done anything wrong, right? Because they have the account password for that compromised credentials. They start to do some remote code execution, they start to do lateral movement in there. And they could be in there for a week, month, whatever. Then the high privilege lateral movement is when they start to move in to try to get the domain admin creds. They start to get those credentials, right? Once they start to do that, they're looking for domain dominance. And once they have that, you know, it's kind of like you might as well go to the pub or something at that point. You know, so it's really, that's kind of where we're looking at it. But that's kind of where, you know, in a brief, what it actually is around how it actually works with the kill chain. And it's a blind spot that we're actually seeing in IT today that people aren't aware of this going on. Now, I bet you guys are going to go back to your offices and unplug everything, right? It's like, I might as well just turn it all off. So what is user entity and behavior analytics? Now, you notice the sort of at the bottom. Okay, so Gartner kind of describes this enterprises successfully, that's why I put the sort of at the bottom, successfully are used user and entity behavior analytics to detect malicious and abusive behavior that otherwise went unmonitored by existing SIEM solutions. How many of you are using a SIEM solution such as Splunk or Squid or something like that? Yeah? Okay, so people are using that. Well, we have that integration with SIEM systems in private preview right now. So I'll show you what that looks like in the console. But essentially what it means, we monitor behaviors from multiple data sources. We have machine learning that we're aware of all the attacks, and I'll show you the types of attacks that we actually get on that. We set profile behaviors because, you know, certain users are only on a regular basis use only certain machines. If all of a sudden they're starting to log on to our domain controller multiple times a day, there could be some issues going on there. We evaluate that to detect advanced attacks. You know, and unlike those SIEM systems and EDR type systems, another traditional UBA protects the malicious actors and their behaviors. Because remember, we have to assume compromise. I don't like to say assume breach because that means you've already been breached. Assume credentials are compromised and be able to actually see what their behavior is and do and put up an alert to show you what's going on. So advanced threat analytics is part of Enterprise Mobility and Security. It's one of the products in there. So if you own the rest of EMS, you have Enterprise Mobility. Advanced Threat Analytics. This is about being able to detect insider threats before they cause damage. So we will have behavior analytics combined with the detections that we know, and I'll talk about that in a second, and the security risks equals an advanced threat detection. Okay, and it's a blind spot, and if you look at the detections that we're looking at, these are some of the, I talked about the TAC kill chain and how the user's going through. Here's what they're actually doing at that time. So right at the reconnaissance side of the things is they are looking at abnormal resource. We're looking at abnormal resource access. There might be some net session enumeration, and a lot of these tools you can do within Windows. You guys are probably familiar with NSLookup and LDAP tools that are in Windows. DNS enumeration, because they're trying to get access to your DNS environment. In ATA version 1.7, we added directory services enumeration as a new feature in there. The next stage in this is our compromised credentials. Now, with brute force attacks, what they're looking for is NTLM creds, Kerberos, or LDAP, right? And also, what you'll see, how many have heard of HoneyToken account activity? So HoneyToken is a way for us to get Kerberos tickets, count suspicious activities, unusual protocol implementation, and we also look at malicious data protection, private information. That's an acronym and a half. So lateral movement. This is where all the pass the hash, pass the ticket. Pass the hash is a hash of your credentials. Pass the ticket is your Kerberos ticket. Overpass the hash. Those are another ones. That's a lateral movement detection that they actually do. And then privilege escalation, and these are a couple of exploits that you want to be careful, make sure you have these on your servers. So that privilege escalation, Forge Pack and Silver Pack. And then, of course, as I said, what they're trying to get to is the golden ticket. Reminds me of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It's like the golden ticket, right? So they're trying to get that. They're trying to get that ticket. And once they've got that, that's kind of where they end up with domain dominance, right? So that's kind of where we end up with that. So let's have a look quickly at ATA, and then I will leave it open for questions for a few minutes. We've got some guys here, so we'll open it up for questions so we can leave plenty of time for that. I'll probably have to re-log on to my server. I've probably been locked out already. Yeah, I guessed it. All right, so like all good cooking shows, I've already started my suspicious activities so that you could see some of this coming up in the portal. But this is the Advanced Threat Analytics portal for ATA. It's kind of like a social feed for threats that are coming into your environment. So maybe we can't call it the Facebook of threat detection, but it's very similar that you get a social feed about what's going on, what's actually happened in your environment. So let's just show you how quickly this can, if we start to do some reconnaissance, we're a hacker and we're trying to actually get into this environment and we do some basic reconnaissance on this environment. Essentially what I'm going to do is, you notice I've already done this before, but I want to show you how fast this actually comes up. So I'm just going to go and do an LS. I've already done NS lookup, right? And I'm going to do an LS on contoso.com, okay? And this is a common tool where attackers are trying to get information about your environment. Okay, so they're using these tools. You notice that the query was refused. The attacker wasn't able to actually get in at that point, right? That's okay, because if we get in there, you'll notice that once we actually do that, we should see it in about 30 seconds to a minute. We should start to see an alert. Oh, so that came up a little bit quicker than I thought. So you see how fast ATA found that particular anomaly on our network. An attacker is trying to get some information, trying to find information. We're going to surface that up. What you can see here is that client one, which is not a DNS server, is doing reconnaissance using DNS. That's probably not a good thing, right? So that particular machine is running computer scanning tools against your domain. Do you want to allow this? We have the ability down here to obviously go and say, yes, that's okay, that's fine. That's not what I wanted to do. Let's get here. Right? So we give you some recommendations. Nope, I didn't think that was going to work very well. Okay, you can probably see that. So basically what it's saying here is probably a good idea to disconnect client one from the network and move it to an isolated network. All right? Move it to a quarantine network so that can't cause any more damage. Now, the next thing, and everybody's probably seen this tool, right? This is the LDAP tool that comes within Windows, and I've done a bind, and what I'm doing here is I'm using contoso /user1.adm, and I'm going to try to do a simple bind to that user, and my password's not password1, so it's m. Did it say error with... Okay, so... Yeah. What that's going to do is that's going to throw another alert into ATA. So we should see another alert come up into the console. In a second. And like, because I did this before, I can show you what that alert's going to be. Okay, what you're seeing here is sensitive account credentials have been exposed. Okay, so user one admin credentials are exposed. Verify that those source computers are not able to do a simple LDAP bind to that, right? Now, as the attacker is in your network, they're going to start to use more sophisticated tools. Okay, as they start to do lateral movement inside your organization, and I've done this before so that you could kind of see the flow of what's actually going on. That was my initial reconnaissance with DNS. Then the attacker used LDAP to do a simple bind. Now the attacker starts to get a little bit more sophisticated. And here you see a honey token activity that's been performed by a super user, right? So they attempted to log on from client one to DC1. So what you're seeing is that they've got super user rights, client one, trying to get onto DC1. They're specifically targeting my domain controller at this point in time. And that is what we call a honey token activity. And I've just got a script that allows me to simulate that. And I'm not going to tell you what the tool is. You can go find it yourself because we're not here to teach you how to hack, right? So you can see as the attacker. And here's another one where we've got the encryption method for the ticket granting ticket failed. From client one has been downgraded. And I learned this might be the result of a golden ticket that's been in use on this. So I have a script that's gone and done some downgrade activity and granted a ticket to that client one. This is where the attacker is now starting to get a lot more sophisticated as they go in that. And we're starting to alert this into this. Might be a good time to take that DC off the network. Again, we're starting to show you alerts to prevent damage before it happens. That's what we're trying to actually do here. All right. And then, has my alert come up again? No, that might not have. But what I want to do is also, one of the things I can't show you live in that is what it looks like on the user to be able to, which one am I on here? So I'm going to go to a console that we use for demo purposes that shows this whole kind of scenario. And what you're actually seeing here, for example, I talked about Derek being able to log on to multiple machines. You see here, here's a suspicion of identity theft that could be occurring. So Michael's account here, who is a real person at Microsoft, he's a senior program manager in the ATA team, he normally logs on to two computers. He logs on to his work desktop, he might log on to a laptop. But he has logged on to six abnormal computers, right? And when we can drill down into this, we can go in and see, okay, what computers has he logged on to? Well, here what we're seeing is he's tried to log on to a bunch of different machines. That could be indicating that his credentials have been compromised. So we go into this one, we can see what he's been trying to do. He's done some Kerberos, some LDAP bind, and some LTM. And this tells you the users that have been logging onto that machine and getting that intelligence in there. All right? Okay. And we'll go back over to here. And of course, what you see, one of the things that attackers try to do is what we call a brute force attack using an LDAP bind. Here you see 450 password guess attempts. They just simply try to guess passwords on accounts with combinations of username and password variations, and they do it over and over. And then we detect that type of attack because there's some potential guesses that might give compromise, might give access to that DC. Okay, we are less than 10 minutes to go, so I am going to switch back to the slides and wrap this up, and then we can give you questions, go to some questions. So, where does, now we talked a lot about all these different tools that are in enterprise mobility and security. Okay, so we wanted to talk about where does this sit from a licensing perspective. If we look at, we have two SKUs that we sell for enterprise mobility and security. One of those is EMS E3, which you get Active Directory, Premium P1, Intune, Azure Information Protection P1, and Advanced Threat Analytics, which I showed you. The other stuff that I showed you is part of EMS E5. Those are what you get with EMS E5 is everything included in EMS E3, plus you get identity and access management with AD identity protection and privileged identity management. Then P2, you get the classification and labeling, and then cloud app security, which I'm going to talk about tomorrow, is part of the E5 SKU. So, with that, if you want to keep going, you can get a trial of mobile security. You can also get a cloud app security. We have a 30-day trial. You can try that as well. And then there's some resources where you can, we have some free IT Pro resources if you want to go, and this I think is in every one of the slides, where you can get more information in regards to that. And of course, if you want to continue a learning path, all of our sessions here at Ignite are going to be put up on Channel 9. And we've got this thing going on Thursday. Is this Thursday night, I think this is? So Spark, make sure you fill out your evaluations, because evaluations are very important to us. It helps us to improve the event and make it better every year. So with that, I'm going to open up to questions. Now, there should be a mic that's actually going around. So if you do have a question, it would be great if you could speak into the microphone, because we do record this. It helps us to have it on the mic. So questions. So we got one down the front. Also, you guys got your mic? Yeah, okay. Hi. Is that on?
Hello.
Could you just quickly talk about the infrastructure requirements for setting up ATA?
Oh, okay, so so the infrastructure requirements for setting up ATA.
Yep.
So you need to have, there's a couple of different servers you have. The ATA center, which is the main one. Then we have a gateway, which is used for balancing all the traffic coming in. We post this on docs.microsoft.com as to how much what you need to run it, ATA. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
So look, there's probably two ways you can look at leveraging ATA as a service, right? And it also depends on, do you have a physical environment or a virtual environment? Yeah. So if it's physical, commonly what most customers will do will do the full console and full gateway, which will then do port mirroring, right? So basically we're looking at all the bind, DNS53, any LDAP lookups, credentials, and the likes like that. With that though, because you need dedicated hardware, we do have a sizing tool. So yep. You basically run it, and it pretty much looks at all your domain controllers within that site and the amount of traffic that we're polling. Your other option, which also works in the virtual world but can be used in the physical world, is the lightweight method. And what that does is actually requires an agent on your domain controller. And so it's actually looking at the network port that is accepting the traffic, and then it's going through that way. So there's cons and pros both ways. One is with the dedicated, and that's based on how much resources you throw on your gateway servers. The lightweight depends on the resources, obviously, on the domain controller. So if that's already running pretty hot, chances are we're going to eventually drop packets, right? Because we can only pass through in real time as quickly as it's coming through. We don't store anything in the lightweight method. The gateway method, we store a little bit, but still it's all doing real-time analysis, right? But and I can provide details on the sizing and how we do a lot of that.
And we're around. We're going to be on the stand for...
Right, correct. Yeah.
So we'll be down there if you want to come down. And we've got a whiteboard down there. We can probably draw this up for you.
Yep.
To go a little bit more information about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so you can come find us down at the showcase in the middle. And then we can go through a lot of these things on the specifics, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Kwok. And I think we've got another question at the back here. Yes.
So you got the per app MFA for most of the applications now. Is there any plans to break down SharePoint and OneDrive? And I guess taking that further, specific sites within SharePoint to say, like, this site collection has MFA applied on it and these ones don't?
So what was the first word you actually said? I didn't get that.
So the MFA, conditional access, based on...
So great question. So the question was, do we distinguish between SharePoint and OneDrive for Business? Currently today, on the identity side, we don't. On the Office 365, they do. We've recently announced the OneDrive Admin Center, and so you can start leveraging that specifically for the OneDrive, which actually uses AAD and the Intune components to apply the compliance controls. Moving forward, the Office team is then also going to... bring in additional capabilities where it's going to be its own standalone product. Because if you look historically, OneDrive is actually a my site of SharePoint, right? But as the products matured and evolved, it's now become its own thing. So yep, that is in the works, yep.
Yep.
So I have two questions. First one is, when you showed that account being blocked, was it being blocked from accessing from the Tor browser or blocked from everything?
Yeah, so that's that particular one is being blocked from the Tor browser because the Tor browser comes up as a suspicious activity. It's because it's routing traffic all over the internet. It's kind of it's not a location that you want to actually have your users. And we can set it so that they can get into the normal browser, and also
yeah. So you could apply an additional risk policy to say I've actually seen your credentials pop up on an anonymous IP or a dark web. And because of that, I'm going to suspend your account, which means the next time you log on, even if it's a legitimate logon, I'm going to require you to confirm that you are who you are, and that could be an MFA or another form of authentication to then take that suspension off.
Or a password reset or something like that.
Yeah, that's a bit extreme, but yeah, you can do that as well.
Okay, thanks. The next question is there an overlap in the conditional access in the Azure portal and the Intune portal?
Yes.
Hello.
You go. That's
so another great question. It's actually the same. So yeah. Intune is actually using the identity side of it to do the detection. It's only when the compliance is device-based will then apply Intune. So things like check if the mobile device is jailbroken, is rooted, is it domain joined, is it registered in AAD, does it have BitLocker enabled, all those sort of things,
yeah.
Right?
It doesn't matter where you set up.
Correct. Yeah, it actually flows over. Right. So you can go into... the Intune portal, whether that's in manage.microsoft.com or whether it's in the Intune blade that's in preview now, or you could go into manage.windowsazure.com or in the Azure portal and Active Directory, and you'll see the same. It flows across. Yeah. So in the background, it's all Graph that's doing the controls. All right. So and you can even go down and start scripting it, and it applies on both.
And that's a great story is around the fact that everything is integrated together using the same. It backing in onto Azure AD. Yes, sir.
Eligibility administration, is that ported? It's going to be ported to Office 365 for GAs and everything else as well?
Can you elaborate on
so
that?
So I think what he's talking about is when I changed Derek, for example, to be an eligible administrator as opposed to a global administrator, is that going to be ported to Office 365? Is that right? Yeah. I don't know.
Right.
It is.
Okay, so... let's break that down firstly, right? Globe admin basically means you're pretty much God on all cloud services. Obviously in Office 365, then you've got your individual ones, right? So you've got Exchange admin, SharePoint admin, compliance admin, and the likes like that, right? So to Jeff's example that he showed earlier, you probably wouldn't want everyone to be Globe admin anyway. That's the same as everyone being an enterprise admin or domain admin for your on-premises, which you know you don't want an Exchange admin or a SQL admin to be able to do that, right? So applies in the same. Now, I think your question is probably alluding to then, will the identity protection or the PIM stuff come across to our workflow and collaboration,
Office
right?
365,
So there's already RBAC in there, But you want it to be more just in time, just enough. Is that right? Yeah. So we have that today in Office 365 called Customer Lockbox, but we only do that really when we or a partner needs access to your tenancy to do troubleshooting and the likes like that. But that's still granted by the customer itself. Taking that further, I'm not aware of anything, but that's feedback I can provide back to the Office team. Yeah.
Okay. Look, we're out of time. It's 11 o'clock, and I'm always want to make sure that we keep to time. Pardon? Yeah, we're going to be hanging out at the end of the room once we pack everything up, and then for the rest of the day, we'll obviously be down at the showcase. So thank you very much for coming. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come and see this one. Thanks.